Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 21 of the Circle Up podcast. We are your hosts, Kara Condi and Allison Vest, and get ready for another episode.
Yeah, we're psyched to be back, and this week we're going to be talking about one of our more commonly requested topics, which is just overtraining and how to know when to back off and take more rest days and just listen to your body a little bit better.
Yeah, and then how to also be mentally okay with those rest days, because I think a lot of us struggle with this idea that we should be in the gym even when our body is telling us that we shouldn't be. So
let's get into it. Woo.
Okay, so to start this off, how many days a week are you normally in the gym, Allison?
I like to do currently 2 days on, 1 day off. Sometimes if I'm feeling really good or if one of those days was a little bit lighter, I'll do 3 days on, 1 day off. But yeah, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, I tend to do the 2 days on, 1 day off, and then 3 days on, 1 day off, I think is my typical schedule, just because it ends up working really nicely because your rest days end up on the same days that way. So I climb Monday, Tuesday, rest Wednesday, climb Thursday, Friday, Saturday, rest Sunday. And then honestly, just for like life planning, I can be like, my Sundays are free or my Wednesdays are free. I can plan all my calls in the morning on Wednesdays because I know I'm going to be free that day.
Yeah. And I have also been liking more recently doing more of like a day on, day off thing when I'm feeling a little bit more haggard. But that's pretty new for me. I think in the past, I've definitely felt like, you know, if my plan is to do 3 days on, 1 day off, that I feel like I have to do that. And definitely now, as I've gotten older and wiser in the sport, I'm definitely not afraid to take more rest days.
Yeah, I've always been kind of afraid of rest days and kind of losing the momentum that I have. Like, that if I take a rest day, that I'm going to lose everything that I just worked on for the last, like, 2 months. And especially if I take, like, a rest week, which I'm actually in the middle of right now. I'm just finishing up taking a rest week. My speech impediment from my youth is coming out. So I'm finishing up one right now, and I actually feel like this time I managed to do it correctly. I think I've always been an all-or-nothing kind of person, where if I'm doing nothing, I have to, like, a rest week, I have to commit to just fully taking the whole week off, like, go on vacation. And this time what I did is, instead of just fully taking it off, because then I always feel terrible when I come back. That's the other thing. My coach has really tried to get me to take a rest week a lot on the way towards the Olympics. And I hated it because I felt like I did all this training and then I came back and felt terrible for like 2 weeks afterwards. And so what I did this time was not completely rest. I still went into the gym 3 separate times, but did really easy climbing, like only climbed to about 35% of my potential, maybe not even that. And did some finger exercises because I was really trying to rest my pulling muscles and not my fingers necessarily.
Yeah, I like that. When I was still training for competitions, we would do something similar, like 3 hard weeks and then 1 quote-unquote easy week. It was usually more volume-based, so you do like 30% of the volume. Like, you'd still go in and climb hard, but if you normally do, let's say you normally do 10 boulders in a session, you would only do a third of that, so maybe 3 boulders. And then the idea with that kind of rest week, or like a more taper week, is that you would, I think the rule was every time I left the gym, I had to be feeling good still.
Like, you weren't just wrecked
or tired at all. Like, I feel like I could still keep climbing. Like, that was a sort of a good gauge to know if you're doing like a more tapered week, which is what I've been doing too. It's just more of a 30% week actually this past week. And just, yeah, to always be, like, leaving the gym feeling good.
Actually, that's an interesting thing to bring up, because how often would you say, when you're climbing 5 days a week, like we both said we kind of tend to do you feel like you leave the gym and are like, I cannot climb another boulder? For reasons other than skin.
Never.
Almost never, right? Yeah, I think that's something that you learn, and that gives you a lot of longevity, is that, like, when to leave so that you still have more in the tank, so that you have more training days, because sometimes having, you know, 3 days of really good training, even if you don't go to that, like, I don't know, till death mark, then you actually get 3 days of great training instead of 1 day where you just like leave it all on the field kind of.
Yeah, I feel like if you're honest with yourself, you can tell when that is, and it depends on the day. For example, I went to the gym with Kyra yesterday, and we both did like really light finger training and a couple of repeaters on the hangboard. just as a easier day, I was planning on climbing today also. And then last minute weather changes, I decided not to climb today. So last minute, I went to the gym again for a second sesh last night to do some moonboard climbing. And I was only climbing for an hour and a half, but all of a sudden I like couldn't do the first move of the boulder I was working on. And that's an example of like, that's a really good indicator of when to leave. So instead of staying there and being like, oh, I've done this move a million times, why can't I do it? It was like, okay, well, I'm tired, so now I'll leave. And if you take into consideration the whole day, I had already been to the gym, I'd already done a session. It was also late-ish at night. It was like 8:30, which is late for me to be at the gym. So I think that's a good example of like, I'm not just gonna keep going for the sake of having a longer sesh. Like, clearly I'm tired. My climbing has dropped off, and so it's time to go.
I also feel like you only have a certain amount of mental energy to give towards good climbing training or any sort of training in a day. And so you maybe also hit a wall. I don't know if that was your case yesterday, yeah. But.
And like, I feel like we both have sessions where we've, especially before the Olympics, when we were training together a bunch, where we're like really tired and we're going to the gym and we would maybe feel slightly guilty for the amount that we did in the day, even if we were at the gym for like 3 hours or at the training center for like 3 hours. Be like, oh, I like didn't do that much today. But I think sometimes that's also like, it's one, mentally draining to be in the gym like thinking about training, but that for me was also a good indicator that I was maybe doing too much. It's like the sessions where you go into the gym and you just like really struggle to make yourself do anything.
Yeah, on those days when I go into the gym and really am having a hard time getting going, I usually try and take a really long warm-up, and in that long warm-up, if I start feeling good and start getting psyched, that's usually how I know that it's just, you know, mental fatigue and not that body fatigue that we've talked about before, as something to kind of keep an eye on to make sure you're not getting too body fatigued to avoid those injuries and like overtraining stuff. But that long warm-up, I think, is a really nice indicator of that, because as you warm up, ideally you want to start feeling better and better. And if you're warming up and just feeling worse and worse, like maybe that's an indicator that you shouldn't be climbing that day.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like, we've also, I was just talking about us having those sessions where we feel like we didn't do anything, but we've also had sessions where we get to the gym and we realize we've both been just sitting on our phones for like 30 minutes neglecting our warm up. And then once we sort of get each other to start warming up and start climbing, then we also would have a bunch of days where we would then feel really good and be really productive.
Yeah. And we're lucky that we're able to spend, you know, sometimes 5 or 6 hours at the gym if we really need to. But that, yeah, I guess that's maybe a little bit more unique in our situation, but you can always try and get psyched in whatever amount of time that you do have.
Yeah, I think, you know, for people who have more of a constrained schedule, who only have, let's say, 2 hours to be at the gym, I do think that warm-up indicator is a good, like, even if you get to the gym right away and start warming up and you just don't, you know, I've had days where I just don't feel like I'm warm ever. Like, that's sort of how that body fatigue feels to me, is like I'm warming up and I don't feel better than when I first started warming up. And if that's the case, then that's usually like, okay, I moved around, I moved the body, I warmed up a little bit, and now I'm just gonna go home.
Yeah, and that can be one of those indicators of actually overtraining. Maybe a sign that you need to take a double rest day, even if you never take double rest days. Like, as me and Allison were kind of hinting at, neither of us are a big fan of kind of those double rest days. We kind of prefer to do the, if I'm feeling really tired, like more day on, day off, or like I'll do a morning session. So maybe it's a Saturday morning session, rest the whole rest of Saturday, all of Sunday, and then climb in the evening of Monday. So it's like you technically only rest one day, but you get as much rest in there as possible. So there are like ways that you can try and prioritize resting without actually taking more and more rest days as well.
Do you have like physical indicators that you know for you start appearing when you're overtraining?
I feel like I get really hungry. I get more and more hungry and like feel like I can never be full no matter how much I'm eating. And I think that's an indicator for me that I need to, one, make sure I'm getting all the protein for how much training I'm getting. And then two, so I maybe add in a protein shake when I'm feeling like that. And then two, maybe decrease my load for a couple days and make sure that my body's keeping up. I also feel like I sleep a ton. Like, I take naps generally. And I tend to take, if I take a nap, it's usually an hour. And that can be almost every day for me. Just that's how my body works, I guess. But sometimes I'll take that hour long nap and wake up and be like, I need to go take another nap. And that's another indicator for me that I am like, okay, my training schedule might be a little too intense right now. I need to eat more and sleep more. Maybe drink more water.
Yeah, for me, it's always been I sleep badly, actually, when I like feel tired all day and tired at night, but I sleep terribly when I'm overtraining, which just makes everything worse, obviously. And then my skin gets really bad, especially like around my lips get really dry. Like I'll wake up in the morning and go to eat breakfast and my lips will bleed.
So your face skin, not your climbing skin.
No, my climbing skin is fine. But yeah, my face skin and just I had eczema growing up really bad, and that usually comes back if I'm overtraining. That's a weird one because it also just is like when the weather's dry and stuff too. But I just took this easier week and it's been a week and a half actually now. But partially because of that, like my the like corners of my mouth were getting really dry and cracking and stuff in the morning. And I just guessed that that was an overtraining symptom. And then I took this week and a half off and it's way better. So
that's kind of nice that you have
hoping that that's what that was.
Yeah.
I also just visited family in Detroit and it was super humid. So that's also difference. Potentially that. But, you know.
Another indicator I think I have is that it tends to be when you're training, you feel a nice steady progression. Not always steady. Climbing's kind of chaotic in that way. But if you suddenly just feel like you cannot hit any of the same PRs that you've been hitting, like even at all, like maybe you can normally hang an edge for 10 seconds and all of a sudden you're failing at 3 seconds, that's also maybe an indicator that you've like kind of over fatigued that and it needs to rest a little bit more before you can train it some more as well.
Yeah, I have especially since I do a lot of quantitative training, like with my block lifts and stuff, I definitely have ballpark numbers of if I'm not doing that number that day, I typically will go home, actually. If I like warm up and start doing my finger training and I can't lift a certain amount of weight, I'll go home. That's happened a couple times.
It's funny though, Allison has also texted me before when she's like, I cannot lift this today. This is awful. Like, I don't know what's happening. Like my body is not working with me. And I texted her back. I was like, are you trying hard?
No.
And then the answer was no.
Yeah.
So again, but that goes into that mental fatigue that we were talking about.
For sure. And I feel like there's different numbers of like, I'm frustrated versus like I'm frustrated that this isn't my PR versus like,
I can't do.
This is literally 40% under what I normally can do.
Yeah, so it's a different number that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, I think I've definitely started doing those before without warming up and then texted you and been like, I can't do this, but hadn't touched the wall yet. I just get overzealous about my lifting. But, I mean, that's a good...
Well, that goes back to our long warm-up.
Exactly.
You know, as soon as you get that long warm-up, you start feeling better and you can get those PRs again.
And just understanding yourself, right? Like, you know, what is, okay, I jumped into this activity too fast. I'm not warm yet. I'm feeling tired. I just need to get warm. And what is like, I actually feel warm and ready for this exercise and I still can't lift under what 40% different of what I normally can, then that's maybe more of a sign that it's not productive to be at the gym.
And that's obviously a very quantitative thing, like Allison was talking about. She has numbers that she knows of like pounds of how many she can normally lift. Whereas like if you're just climbing at the gym, I think, you know, if you have your climbs that you've warmed up on before and they're suddenly feeling like very different. Like I had a day coming back from Korea where I had like a slight cold. I was jet lagged and I was like, oh, I'll just kind of go shake off the jet lag at the gym. And I literally could not climb V4. I like fell on a V4 and felt like I was going to hurt my finger on a V5. And I was like, I should not be here today. And somebody I was climbing with was like, oh no, you should just try a little bit longer. And I was like, nope, this is not the day. Like,
going home.
This is only going to hurt me. And this single day is not going to matter in the long run. And I think that's something that I use to not kind of validate my experiences. It's like, and like also reassure my brain that what I'm doing is fine. Because I think that's one of the hardest things for me is that I really have this panic that I'm going to lose all of my progress. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. And so just reminding yourself that one day is not going to make or break your performance at a next event, at a next trip, on your Boulder project. It's really the long run that matters a lot more.
Yeah. And you know, what's really going to keep you off the wall for the most amount of time is if you push too hard and
get injured.
Exactly.
Yep. Exactly. Avoiding injury is our main goal as well as getting stronger.
For sure. One thing that's also helpful is, and that has been helpful for both Kyra and I, has been finding other activities and things to do on rest days so that you're not just sitting at home, twiddling your thumbs and just thinking about climbing. For example, we've started playing volleyball. We've talked about that a bit on the podcast before. Kyra now boxes for cross training, so that's another one that's not necessarily a rest day, but it's something that replaces climbing as an activity. You gotta be careful with those though, because I definitely have taken a rest day on one of the days where we've played volleyball for like 3 hours and then taken a second rest day the next day because I was tired from volleyball.
Yeah, I tend to at least have one like sacred rest day a week, so that's usually my Sundays. Like Sundays are like the day where I will not do anything. Like if somebody asks me to go on a hike, I will say no, or even a walk, honestly. I'm like, nope, today's full rest, not doing anything. And even though I really want to play volleyball sometimes on those days because it's so fun. But then my other rest day, Wednesdays, I tend to have be more of an active rest day. And so that's those days where maybe I will play volleyball for 3 hours or I will box. I tend to do actually boxing as a second session on climbing days just because it is not very restful.
No, not at all restful.
Not at all restful. Even say. It rests the climbing muscles because they're so different, but it's still like obviously a lot of activity. But I do think it gives my rest days a lot of purpose. When, like, especially, I mean, we are pro climbers, so we climb all the time and it's our full-time job. And so it can feel like you are honestly not doing your job if you're resting, but reminding yourself that resting is just as much training. Resting is training is something that, my sports psych has told me before too. It's just as important to your performance as your actual training days, resting and sleep.
And you don't get stronger on your training days. You get stronger on your rest days because that's when your muscles are actually recovering and rebuilding and actually, quote unquote, getting the strength that you've put the effort in to make on the training days. You're really actually getting those on your rest days.
Yeah, but I think, yeah, keeping those rest days fulfilling in some way is really helpful because otherwise it can really wear on you. And I've seen this happen to both myself and friends where you see them just going into the gym and you're like, no, you need to chill.
Yeah, just finding something else that's not necessarily work or necessarily
play.
I mean, even productive in that way. Yeah. Like something that's like a different hobby or like, I really like crafts.
Oh yeah. So I meant to bring that up.
Just doing something that I enjoy. And especially for me, I really value my time by myself too. So those go hand in hand, just whether I'm like painting or I don't crochet anymore. I've retired now that I've been injured. or yeah. So painting, or I've done embroidery or my shirt making, or I have all these different crafts that I'll do. And part of that is just to have this alone time to reset and recharge. But then also having these different things that I'm passionate about makes it easier to not even want to go to the gym because I'm doing something different. People, you know, climbing is amazing. And so people get really tunnel vision into climbing as their one and only passion. And then it makes it hard when you're like, you have a Sunday when you have nothing to do all day. Like, it's sort of like, what else am I going to do other than go into the gym? Yeah. So then that's where they end up.
Oh, I actually just thought of, you remind me of another way that you can tell if you're overtraining and getting kind of burnt out. Like, genuinely, I love to go into the gym and train, and I know you're the same way. Like, you love the feeling of going in and working on weaknesses, working on getting your fingers stronger, all of those things. And like if I go have a day where I'm like, I just don't want to do it, that's actually really telling for like my personality and your personality, I think, because it is such a big part of our personality to actually love the training. And that was happening a lot with my shoulder. I like would be so psyched to train and then I would go in and my shoulder would hurt and it's like, damn it, I really wanted to train today. And then, you know, debating if that pain was something that was injurious or if it was something that was just I had to deal with for that session.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that, especially with, like I said, I constantly have just some sort of art craft going on. And if I like wake up in the morning and I'm like, man, I really wish I didn't have to go to the gym so I could just like work on this painting all day, then that also is a good indication for me that I'm maybe doing too much in overtraining.
Psych is just as important to the training toolbox, honestly, just as much as like motivation or try hard is. Like, you need to be psyched and excited to go to the gym and keep, that's so important for longevity, again, not just from the injury standpoint, but from the, like, the mental standpoint. And you want to be able to enjoy what you're doing. And so if you're forcing yourself to climb on those days, if you're feeling that way all the time, like, that's when you need to take that mental break.
Yeah, and we all have our own tips and tricks to try to get out of sort of a lull, especially when you get to the gym. I think we've already talked about that already on this episode. But for me, a really good tool for that too, other than the long warm-up, is definitely headphones and just listening to music, because that sometimes just is the little extra psych. Like, when I'm on a low psych day and I'm driving to the gym and I realize I forgot my headphones, I will fully turn, if I have time, I will fully turn around and go home and get them and go back to the gym because they're that important. And they definitely like change the tone of a workout and a warm up for sure.
I was actually going to the gym the other day and I was like, I'm just going to put headphones in and I am not going to talk to anybody. And they were like, yeah, right. Like, you're not going to do that. And sure enough, I got to the gym. Headphones were dead. But on top of that, immediately saw like four people I hadn't seen in forever and then went and chatted to all of them. And I was like, I was going to have just a full headphone sesh, just
in and out.
Yeah. That was going to be my plan. And I completely derailed it myself. But that was also something that I was actually excited to do. As soon as I saw these people I hadn't seen in a really long time, I was like, oh, I'm not going to put headphones in. I'm going to go talk to them. And I think that kind of segues into something really well that me and Allison wanted to talk about. It's just like knowing when to approach people. And, you know, headphones, I feel like, are a really good indicator of that. If somebody's, you know, jamming to their own headphones, like, maybe don't tap them on the shoulder unless, like, something is urgent. They're probably in their own space and working on their own psych, and, you know, that's important to what they're doing. And so to interrupt it is not really necessarily the right thing to do.
I feel like maybe this is a personal thing, but when I have headphones on and it's the vibe where I don't want to talk to anybody, because everybody has those days, they usually go with those low motivation days when I need the headphones in order to be able to do what I'm doing. I like purposely will try to not make eye contact with people. Whereas if I have headphones in and it's just the vibe of the day,
just to feel the music,
see somebody and wave at somebody and then take headphones out and start chatting. But usually, like, if you have to like look, like bend over to like meet somebody's eye or like physically tap them on the shoulder to get them to like notice you, that's usually a good, like maybe a good indicator that they're deep in their motivation session.
That's a great point, because I think often I just like to have music because I like the vibe of the music and not necessarily because I don't want to talk to somebody. But that usually means that if I see them, I take the headphones out and immediately start chatting. Whereas if I want to be listening to music because that's how I'm in it, I'll maybe wave at them and then like go on my phone, you know, and kind of make it obvious that that's what I'm doing. And that I'm not in a social mood, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. That's maybe like a niche topic, but
I don't think it is. So many people at the gym have headphones in, and it's a complicated subject, you know?
Yeah, especially with how good noise-canceling headphones are.
Sometimes you just don't notice.
Sometimes it's just so awkward. Like, somebody's, like, talking, and you have to, you know, you're like, sorry, what? And then it sounds like you're being... But literally, my headphones are so good that I can't hear what anybody's saying.
I think that also... We've gotten the question a lot of whether or not to come up to us at the gym or other pros or maybe somebody else you recognize from Instagram, like whether or not to come up and say hi. And I think this is something that's personal to everybody. But generally, like, I know I like to talk to people at the gym, even if they're people I don't know. And especially if you're just saying nice things and then you're on with your way. Like, I love those interactions. I think that I really value them and getting to know the community and meet all of you guys who listen to our podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's always, like, a cap on the amount of time. Usually, like, it will depend if you're doing a timed workout or something. Like, I think there's like a more appropriate times to say things for sure. But I mean, I spend a lot of time just sitting, resting between attempts and stuff at the gym. And then it's always nice to be able to talk to people in between boulders. That's like a good way to pass the rest time.
Yeah. And actually, another thing we talked about is that I think the easiest way to come up to somebody who you maybe recognize, and this goes for anybody, is to just say, hey, you're this person, right? Then continue the conversation from there. It's not awkward. So.
I also have had people, just because I'm the Olympic sidekick, ask me if Kyra is Kyra before. That definitely has also happened in the gym. Like, oh, hey, is that Kyra? Which, that's also legit, too, to phone a friend to ask if that is, in fact, Kyra Condi across the gym.
Sadly, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, are you Kyra Condi?
Oh,
and I have a...
Kyra has a very deep-seated hatred for names that are pronounced in two different ways and that are pronounced, in fact, in the less common way to pronounce them.
Yeah, so I would say 70% of the time people pronounce my name Kyra instead of Kyra. And I mean, I'm biased. I like my name better. And so I will always correct you. Some people I think are less outgoing or maybe... more awkward than
Kyra
me.
Kyra will correct, like, baristas. Like, baristas. Yeah, we'll say, like, order for Kyra, and she'll go, it's Kyra.
I go, it's Kyra, thank you, and grab it. Mostly because, yeah, and I feel so bad when somebody doesn't correct me if their name is pronounced incorrectly. And so I always try and make a point to pronounce people's names correctly because, you know, it's the name that you're given. And
but if Kyra's had to deal with this for her whole life, so it's definitely a personal deep-seated issue. But if I, like, read that somebody had a baby and named it something that's sounds like it should, or that looks like it should be pronounced a different way, Kyra goes, ugh. Every time.
Yeah, my future child will have an easy to pronounce name is all I'm gonna say. Something with one common pronunciation and not two, because there you otherwise go. You're up for a lifetime of
you heard it here first, folks.
The worst one I got was Kira Candle. And I was like, that's just not even remotely correct.
People always just think my name is Allison Best, but I'll take it.
Oh, well, that's kind of fun. And I think this is even more of a thing as climbing becomes more and more popular, and obviously all of the crags where you see pros often, like, are more frequented. Like, you're going to run into people who you probably recognize, and yeah, I think our advice would just be yourself and be forward and just say hi, because why not? Worst thing that can happen is that they continue on with their day.
It's true. Do you remember the first pro climber you ever met?
How about this? I'll tell a story of the first time that I met Alex Honnold. I didn't actually meet him because I hid in the gym. I saw him and panicked.
In the bathroom?
No, I panicked.
You just walked to the other side of the,
Oh, I can tell another story of me meeting a pro who will remain unnamed. Where?
Can I guess at the end?
Sure, yeah. So you've maybe heard the story. Oh. A bunch of male pro climbers in the Boulder area back in like 2014.
Oh, I know what it is, yeah.
I was walking to the bathroom and a bunch of them were like all talking about some boulder and they were kind of miming it out. And I walked by right as he mimed a move of like a huge move out right and he smacked me in the nose like so hard. I almost fell over. It was in front of literally every single pro climber in the Boulder area. And I was not what you would call a pro at the time. And oh my God, I was like horrified because if you get hit in the nose really hard, your eyes start watering. You start crying. And so I'm trying to tell him that it's fine. And I'm
like sobbing.
I'm like, it's fine. In front of like literally every single guy who I had like posters of on my wall. And oh my God, it was horrifying. But so if you're meeting a pro, it can't be as bad as that. So I have somehow made it in the climbing world even after that experience. So
really proud of you, Kara.
Thank you. Yeah.
For recovering from that.
I know. I'm really proud of myself as well. But hopefully that gives you some courage to approach people at the crag or the gym if you really feel like you want to. Because it really can't be as bad as getting punched in the nose by all of your favorite pros.
That's true, Kara. That's a great, succinct story to tell, which was a great point to nail it home there at the end.
Thank you. I feel like it's really relatable. But anyway, thank you for listening to another episode of Circle Up. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.